Well, good morning. Welcome to the show. It's Evan Bray. Great to have you here on this Wednesday midweek morning. It's literally getting us to the end of August here in the next few days, which means kids will be back to school after the Labor Day weekend. And it's a busy time in rural Saskatchewan harvest, which is literally my favorite time of the year. Absolutely love it. Been in contact with my brother. We're probably going to be going on the farm, I'm guessing, maybe by this weekend or sure in the next week or so. So for me, being able to get back out there and help, I'm a glorified truck driver. That's exactly what I do. Tim does the combining. We're a fairly small family farm operation, but just to be able to get out there reminds me of growing up on the farm, which to me will always be an important part of my life. And hey, speaking of farm kids, I got one joining me here right away. Anytime we get to check in with Laura Lee Davies, who's the acting chief of the Regina Police Service, I appreciate it. This is our monthly check-in with RPS. And Laura Lee, is it busy on the harvest front in Lee Ross, Saskatchewan?
We're still probably a little over a week away from harvest, but it's busy in terms of all the prep, getting the combines ready and all that good stuff.
That's so, what I was saying last weekend. I drove actually a couple of different ways in the province, and you could either see farmers in the field, the dust and the, you know, the evidence that they were out there working, or combines with the belt guards up, they're greasing, they're getting things ready. I mean, they're either in the yard getting prepped or they're in the field, but it's that time of the year for sure.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks for joining us. It is a monthly check-in with RPS, and we usually will say, what are the crime stats and crime trends looking like? You've come through a fairly busy summer. What have the hot spots been?
Yeah, for sure. So overall, our crime is down, which is good for the month of July. We're down almost 17% when you talk about property crimes and violent crimes. Obviously, we do have a couple areas that aren't trending in that direction. Arsons, again, are something we're keeping an eye on. And unfortunately, our homicide numbers for 2025 have jumped up to 8. Those numbers are really kind of cyclical. Every year, you know, we have ebb and flows. I would say the good news on that front is that we've laid charges in all 8 of those cases.
Closure, obviously, and being able to hold offenders accountable is important, but homicides, murders are tough to prevent. What can you do, or what do you consider part of the strategy to dig into what is that violent personal crime?
Yeah, you know, there's so many different factors that can, you know, weigh into the cause of those homicides. You know, some of them are obviously domestic conflict. Some of them are more around drugs. Some of them are around gangs. So I think having good, solid work in all of those areas, you know, with our domestic conflict, if we're able to liaise with our partners who work in that space to ensure we can get connections to families who are at risk in terms of, you know, drugs and gangs, that's more about holding those offenders accountable and out of the community when we do have the opportunity to lay charges, and hopefully having them locked up prevents further violence in the community. So I think it's both that proactive and also that reactive as well.
I saw a release RPS did here not that long ago, basically warning people that certain areas of the city were having issues with theft from autos. So these are peoples that are rummaging through vehicles at night, stealing anything from change to sunglasses. Why the spike in a couple of areas, do you know?
Yeah, you know, it's really hard to say what is accounting for those spikes. You know, it could be as simple as one or two people in the community who are causing havoc. You have somebody who, you know, goes out for an evening. They can have a huge impact on the number of crimes that they commit when it's checking doors on vehicles or even, you know, something like breaking into open garages. And so, you know, obviously we're doing our best to try and hold those folks accountable, but really want to remind people that if you can lock the doors on your vehicles, ensure that those windows are closed, take any of those valuables out, then hopefully those people out in the community are passing along to somebody else.
You bolster up the police numbers when something like that happens. If you see a hotspot area trend, do you try and hit it with more officers to deter it?
Absolutely. So we have our crime analysts that are looking every day in terms of where the hotspots are and the crime trends. We relay that information to our front line. And so we'll say, hey, this area has been especially hard hit over the last 24 hours or the past week. Spend some extra time out there. Do some proactive patrols. You know, if you're doing some paperwork, sit in that area. So we are certainly passing that information on to our frontline officers so that they can direct more attention in those areas.
There was a video since you and I chatted last time that went around on social media, and it was probably a tough one for many people to see, because what happened was officers were on scene at a call. A dog from the residence that they were at attacked one of the canine dogs, and ultimately police officers shot the dog. Any details you can provide on that?
Yes, obviously, you know, tragic situation. Our officers were having people come out of this residence. We had been there for a serious call. The dog came out, and when it saw our canine dog, was really intent on attacking our canine. The canine handler did his best to try and, you know, dissuade the dog, you know, kicking at a dog, that kind of thing. He actually even lifted his dog up in the air to try and prevent the attack. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to do that. And so, you know, made the decision that you know, lethal force was necessary in terms of being able to stop that attack. There were some other officers that were there, and they were, you know, about to sort of do the same thing when it appeared that dog was very intent on attack. So never good when that happens. Obviously concern for our canine member as well and their police service dog. Fortunately, the injuries were not severe. And then that whole process is subject to a review. So we're collecting all the information from the officers on scene, and then our use of force board will review that information as well.
Lauralee Davies is the acting chief of the Regina Police Service, and this is our monthly check-in. Just this week, I believe, you released numbers from the Pursuit Report. This is an annual report that's done reflecting back on the previous year, so this would be the 2024 Pursuit Report. How often are police in Regina chasing or pursuing vehicles?
Well, not very often. In 2024, it only happened 3 times. And so, you know, those numbers have dramatically increased over the last number of years. You know, if I look back at 2021, that number was 35. I think the introduction of our air support unit has been a game changer in terms of reducing risk to the public and to our members and even the suspects, and the fact that our plane is able to do that surveillance and able to relay that information to the front line without pursuing. And so, you know, I think that would be the biggest thing that we can point to as a game changer, but also corresponding, I would say the number of stolen autos that we're seeing in our community has dropped dramatically over the last number of years, and so that clearly does have an impact as well.
Can you give us a sense of how will that play out operationally? If police officers are trying to stop a car, it doesn't stop for them, the plane's in the sky, how does that play out?
For sure. So it's actually when our plane is up, anytime our members are getting ready to do a traffic stop, even if it's something that they think has potential for a risk, they'll let our air support unit know, saying, hey, I'm, you know, I'm going to pull this vehicle over here shortly. Can you get an eye on me? Or, you know, if they just happen to call in a traffic stop, the air support unit is always on the radio. They're listening. So they'll get their camera right on that location. And then if the vehicle does evade, they'll just say, yeah, we've got eyes on it. We'll take over. They relay that information to our officers on the ground so they can talk about this. You know, lots of times independent of police action, those vehicles are driving not safely. And so they can relay that information to our ground units, and it looks like the vehicle is slowing down, or our members can sort of be in the area without actively pursuing. And then they relay that information, you know, if it's pulled over or whatever, and then our officers can quickly get into the area and respond and hopefully arrest those suspects.
Lauralee Davies is my guest, the acting chief of the Regina Police Service. I want to take a break, but when we come back, I know back to school means a busy time for certain members of the Regina Police Service. We'll talk about that. And I know you were also recently at national meetings where you sat in on a presentation, drones as first responders. I'm curious to hear more about that. Laura Lee Davies and the Regina Police Service when we come back here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Welcome back. The conversation continues with our guest, Laura Lee Davies, who is the acting chief of the Regina Police Service. The text line is as busy with harvest texts as anything else. I identified off the start, Laura Lee and I both grew up actually not far from one another, but rural Saskatchewan. We talked about harvest. People are all over the harvest. Do you still get out and help, by the way, Laura Lee?
I haven't been out for a couple of years, but like you, I would be a glorified truck driver, maybe a meal delivery person, but I don't mind doing a couple of rounds in the combine for sure. There's something about this time of year that makes it feel really special.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I want to talk about a few more topics while we've got you. Back to school, obviously happening next week. What does that mean for RPS?
For sure. So our school resource officers over the summer are deployed through a patrol capacity. And so they are just back this week. They're prepping all the things they need for back to school. So I actually had the opportunity to talk to them on Monday. They're doing some of their training right now to ensure that they're ready to go for the school year. So obviously having them back out in the schools, they're excited for the start of the new school year. And then as well, our traffic officers are, prepping around school zones and school zone safety. Obviously, the start of the year, kids are excited and, may not have their minds exactly on, pedestrian safety. So we like to be out in those school zones to ensure that people are slowing down and ensuring that our students are safe.
Recently, the Canadian Association Chiefs of Police meetings occurred. These are national meetings. You were there representing RPS, and you sat in on a presentation on drones as a first responder. Can you give us some insight what this was about?
Yeah, it's interesting. So there's a couple pilot projects happening in Alberta right now. So it's essentially you get a 911 call to an address, and you have an operator that is able to send a drone, from the police station, and it heads out there. It can get video from the scene to show exactly what is happening before frontline officers are able to get there. So, it could, does the person have weapons? How many people are there? So really it's around that situational awareness and getting that information a lot sooner than officers can get there. You think about even if you can get to an emergency as quick as you can in traffic, that a drone flying straight there can certainly get there a lot quicker. So it's interesting. We'll keep an eye on what's happening in Alberta. Clearly, we have our air support unit, which serves that same purpose, but there are times when that plane can't go up, and so potentially something that we'll keep an eye on and take a look at. The drone technology has really advanced in the last number of years, and so you can actually get drones for a lot less money than was previously possible.
I also want to talk about, I know a topic of conversation on the national level was around Bill C-2, which is the Strong Borders Act. There have been some concerns issued that it's too wide sweeping in the powers it gives to police. That's not really the case. It's a bit of a misnomer. Can you clarify what does Bill C-2 do when it comes to policing?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's not necessarily giving police more power. It is actually streamlining the process to be able to access the same information. So you think about where we are with technology today. These laws have been in place for a number of years in terms of being able to access, for instance, subscriber data if, there's an investigation in relation to, for instance, child pornography. The hoops that officers have to jump through in order to get that authorization are really, beyond what should be happening. And so it's really going to be streamlining some of those process pieces, really closing some loopholes, and really just be able to have police officers have access to information a lot quicker and faster, but still through the same judicial authorization.
I want to get a couple more things in here. We've got about 4 minutes left. So today, in fact, as you and I are talking, Saskatoon City Council is discussing the Safe Public Spaces Act that the provincial government brought into legislation here not that long ago. Can you give us a sense? Is this something that you have discussed with the board, with City Council? And what are the chances that Regina will be using this statute?
Absolutely. So we just spoke to our board yesterday, in fact, around opting into that legislation. So the way that the legislation is written, municipalities and First Nations have to opt in, which means they have to pass a bylaw that says that that legislation would be enforced. And so our recommendation to the board is that the city opt in and create that bylaw. And so our board was certainly in favor of that. And so that'll be handed over to City Council to make that happen. And then, you know, it's really just another tool in the toolbox for our frontline members to be able to work on increasing public safety.
Is it something that will bring about something for your officers to use, or do you have powers under different pieces of legislation that accomplish the same thing now?
Sure. So clearly we have the criminal code, which, you know, if somebody is out there with a weapon, you know, we can lay charges. I think where we will be able to see it, we just ran a report in terms of weapon offenses from the start of the year. In a lot of cases, maybe the complainant doesn't want to press charges. But there's still a weapon out there. So this legislation will give us the power to seize those weapons without a charge in those cases where maybe the victim doesn't want to cooperate with police, or maybe we don't have a complainant. So I think just in being able to take some of those weapons off the streets will be, like I said, another tool for us to be able to use.
Can you give me a sense of where overdoses are? They were at one time an extreme problem in Regina. I think Saskatoon maybe surpassed Regina in terms of the number of overdoses. Where are things at there?
Yeah, so up to the end of July, we've had 48 fatal overdoses in the city. That's probably about half of what we saw last year. So things are trending in a good direction. You know, I can't come up with the answer 100% in terms of what that looks like, but our officers have transported, a good number of people, well over 150 people, to the complex needs emergency shelter, where folks are able to get access to addictions counseling, mental health counseling. And so, I'd like to think that some of that work is breaking those cycles, and perhaps people are being able to access the supports they need.
In the last minute we have with Laura Lee Davies, the acting chief of RPS, your SWAT team is involved in a positive campaign helping the Hospitals of Regina Foundation.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a bit of a superhero campaign. And so in cooperation, as you said, with Hospitals Regina Foundation, we've got five of our SWAT members are going to be rappelling off of the General Hospital. It's all in efforts to raise money and to bring some smiles to the kids who are in the hospital wards there. So they're dressing up as superheroes. They'll be rappelling. Really a nice way for them to be able to give back to kids and to the community as well.
Good stuff. This has been a great check-in, Laura Lee. Thanks so much for your time, and we'll talk again in a month from now.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Acting Chief Laura Lee Davies of the Regina Police Service with our regular monthly RPS check-in. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Tell me that the end is so sure. Somehow not any social enough. Welcome back to the program. Evan Bray, great to have you here on this Wednesday morning. Well, I have regular conversations with a number of who I consider to be regular guests of this program, one of them being Darren Ulmer. We have Darren Ulmer here from time to time from White Owl Financial Solutions, of course, a Sun Life advisor here in Saskatoon. And he is the king of sending me articles that have to do with investment and articles that have to do with just topical things that might be of interest to discuss on this program. He sent me one the other day that caught my eye, and it really was an article. It came from an investment executive publication that talked about, from an investment advisor standpoint, the underserved client groups. when you think about who investors are meeting with and who everything from advisors to portfolio managers will meet with, it's a wide array of people. It's different demographics. It's people that are close to or retired. It's people that are just starting out, but it's also male and female clients. And so youth and women are often looked at as underserved client groups, groups that more and more are demanding and needing this sort of service. And it seems weird that in 2025, we would need to stop down and think about this from a different perspective. But sometimes industries can be slow to catch up. So when you think about what you look for from a wealth advisor, a money manager, someone who's going to give you direction, it's not, shouldn't be a surprise that maybe what men are looking for, what women are looking for, can be two different things. They look for different value from their advisors. They have different, maybe whether it's financial goals, priorities, which is why I've got the next two guests that I've got joining at the recommendation, as I said, of my friend Darren. I'm happy to say we've got two great guests joining us, both with Sun Life Financial. I've got portfolio manager Christine Tan joining us. Christine, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
And advisor with Sun Life Financial, Caitlin Aitchison. Caitlin, thanks for taking the call today.
Yes, thanks again for having us.
So I just talked about this article that I've got that kind of inspired this segment, this discussion. Do you, let me just start off by asking, maybe I'll Caitlin, start with you. Do you think there is a gender gap when it comes to financial advice and management?
I definitely do. So I've been in the industry 14 years, and I would say that the majority of the clients I see coming my way or seeking my advice are women, and the reason that they're coming is because they're looking for a little bit of a different viewpoint, and they're looking for a different conversation.
So, I mean, that's what I'm interested in into digging into. But maybe, Christine, before we even get into, you know, how do you approach a client differently depending on a variety of different things, why do you think today in 2025 that this gap still exists, Christine?
It's a great question, Evan. And we think that part of it is just the evolution of the role women play in the economy over the last several decades. You know, if you look at just within Canada, back in 1976, women were roughly half of the labor force, right? And if you fast forward to 2023, which was the latest data that we have from StatsCan, women are now 86% of the labor force. So in other words, there are more women earning wages today, which means there are also more and more women being more financially independent. And as Caitlin said, women think differently in the way that they're financially planning for their future. Yeah. We also have statistics that show that women on average live a few years longer. They also on average might be the younger partner in a partnership. So whether it's a marriage or just a very long-term relationship, or they could be same gender relationships as well. But all of that to say that that's why there's a forecast that by, you know, over the next several years, women are going to grow to control slightly more than half the financial assets. So it's partially that's the reason why we're noticing the need for more strong voices in the financial advice industry like Caitlin.
Mm-hmm. So on that note, I've got in front of me a CIBC capital market report that estimates by 2028, so that's only 3 years from now, Canadian women will control $4 trillion in financial assets. And if you think about the growth of global wealth, global financial wealth increased over the last 5 years by 43%, but wealth controlled by women rose 51%. So it's growing, and it's growing faster. So Caitlin, if I come back to you, clearly we've got advisors and money managers that are men that can serve both men and women that serve both. But what do you need to keep in mind working in the industry? You're an advisor with Sun Life Financial. What do you keep in mind as clients come into your office?
Well, I think first and foremost is that not everyone's journey is the same. And one of the initial conversations or questions that we'll ask is, what's your first memory of money? And that can really tell, you know, a story for that client in terms of their attitudes toward money, their attitudes towards investing. So if they've grown up, with parents that maybe, survived the Great Depression and really pinched their pennies along the way, and then they find out much later that their parents actually did have money, but they just were, you know, so used to like scrimping and saving. There's, you know, families that are people that grew up in a one-parent household, right? So they have a different view of what money looks like. So I would say that kind of getting to the root of where clients are coming from really sets the stage of where they're wanting to go.
Mm-hmm. Caitlin Aitchison is one of my guests, advisor with Sun Life Financial. Christine Tan, also with us, portfolio manager at Sun Life Financial. I know that, and I've talked with different money managers on the show enough to know that each case is very distinct, very unique. But if we do separate men and women, is there a distinct difference, Christine, in what women value from advisors and maybe what they want to focus on, what their priorities are?
That's a great question. And I think, you know, I'll take a step back and talk about more women, our character traits. So it's a bit of a generalization, but I think women do take a more holistic approach, looking at the bigger picture. So thinking not necessarily just in terms of absolute returns in a given period of time, but maybe more goals-based. So even as a portfolio manager myself, for example, when we're looking at companies to invest in, we're looking at the big picture. How do they treat all their stakeholders, their employees? How do they deal with their customers? As opposed to just single focus on how did the stock do. So I think that there's that bigger approach. There's more of an empathy-based communication that's needed. So again, as Caitlin said, I love that sort of approach of what's your first memory, you know, really trying to understand the underlying reasons and what motivates a person. I think that's more important than, again, you know, here's a investment opportunity that could get you the highest possible return.
Mm-hmm. Christine Tan, Caitlin Aitchison, both professionals with Sun Life Financial. Caitlin, I'm guessing through your career, you mentioned a decade and a half you've been working in the industry. If you meet with two clients, spouses, husband and wife, you probably see the differences even just coming out in those exploratory meetings when you're talking about finances and things like tolerance to risk and those types of things. Can you see that play out right in front of you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there definitely, to me, has been a shift in terms of kind of who's managing, the household money. But also there's generally one person that's a little bit more interested in the planning than the other person. And that's not necessarily, male or female. What I would see, like, in terms of like the biggest difference is that women tend to sell themselves short on knowledge. So they're not necessarily willing to contribute to the conversation unless they're 100% confident, in what they're saying and in, you know, finances specifically. But I also find that they're more, interested in having conversations or acknowledging the risks associated with planning for retirement, such as maybe dying prematurely or having a critical illness or becoming disabled. So, they're more apt to engage in what that might look like. But also, I think in terms of the planning piece, very much the sandwich generation, right, plays out where they might have, you know, children, but also elderly parents. So they're looking at, well, what if I needed to take time off for, you know, just to support an elderly parent, or, you know, what if we needed to help our kids? We're talking about the underserved youth, now more than ever, really difficult to buy a home, right, to get in the housing market. And so those conversations or those topics are really top of mind, I find, for a lot of women investors.
Mm-hmm. Kate, Caitlin Aitchison is one of my two guests, advisor with Sun Life Financial. Christine Tan, also with us, portfolio manager at Sun Life Financial. So, I mean, this really is, and this is the conversation I had with, I mentioned Darren Ulmer, who is like many financial planners and portfolio managers, he has a team, and his team is made up of men and women. So it's really not about men being served by men, women being served by women in this industry, but it's about understanding what elements match up with what is important to you, aligns essentially with your goals. What would you say people should think about when they're meeting and sitting down with a financial planner? Christine?
I love how you position that, Evan, because I think it's really important to highlight that, as you said, there's no one approach that's better than the other. There's no one gender that's better at a job than the other, because we do bring different skill sets. And all kinds of, there's been all kinds of leadership studies that indicate that. So I think the important thing is, as Caitlin has called out, just when you're having that conversation, if there's more than one person that's involved in that, to make sure that the both voices are heard, and perhaps try to make sure that both viewpoints are reflected in the team that's working with them. And we are seeing more, a lot of blended teams in the industry. So at Sun Life Global Investments, for example, we've been running this annual Women's Investment Symposium. This is our 10th year anniversary, actually, where in the very beginning, it was basically all women advisors or female advisors. But what we've noticed, which is so cool, Evan, over the last several years, is we've had men joining this symposium. And they said they're joining for a couple of reasons. One is to really get a handle on, okay, what are our female clients thinking? Are there certain ways of communication that we should sort of be more aware of? And then on the other hand, some of them will say, well, we have women on, women advisors as my partner and my team, so I want to understand what she's working with, how, where she's coming from. So we love that there's both sides coming together and really recognizing the value of that perspective. Mm-hmm. We also notice when we're setting up the symposium that even women advisors talking or female advisors speaking to each other, it's a high level of collaboration. I'm really so inspired by, you could have two women at competing firms, really the competitors, because, you know, they're trying to win more clients and grow their businesses. But when they sit down and one of them will say, you know, I'm dealing with this particular thing and issue and conversation, the other woman will say, well, this is what worked for me. And that sharing of ideas, that collaboration, sort of providing that safe space, mm-hmm. recognizing that this is an industry where there's still an underrepresentation and that there's room for more female advisors to enter and grow.
It's fascinating
stuff. That's what we've noticed.
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff. This has been such a great chat. Christine Tan, Caitlin Aitchison, thank you so much for giving us a little bit of time today on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Evan.
Yes, appreciate it. And of course, you can go to the Sun Life website. There's all kinds of, if you're looking for resources or connections, both of these two professionals just happen to work with Sun Life Financial. So their website has links to lots of different resources, tools, links that can help you out with that. And again, tip of the hat to our friend Darren Ulmer for twigging me on. He's got no shortage of ideas of money topics that we can talk about. And I always appreciate that. Pretty much on a daily or at least a weekly basis, we're having email communication about, hey, here's an interesting topic. You might want to broach this on the show. So thanks again, Darren, for the nudge there. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Good morning. Thanks so much for spending a little bit of time with us on a day that for some is a busy day in the field. In fact, Albert sent a text in just moments ago saying, hey, Evan, my brother's lentils are going 64 bushels to the acre. You want to send in your yield updates? We'll take them here for sure, Albert. Thanks so much. By the way, it says Albert is texting from Montreal. I'm not sure if that's factual or not, but if you are, thanks for listening into the show. We have been talking a lot about the, maybe we'll say, lack of progress that Canada has been able to get some traction on when it comes to reaching a trade agreement with the United States. Canada-U.S. Trade Minister Dominic LeBlanc, we know, in Washington this week, meeting with Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick. After their meeting yesterday, lots was made about what is being called a very constructive and lengthy meeting People are making a big deal. Reporters making a big deal about the fact the meeting was scheduled for 1 hour and it lasted over 90 minutes. So it well exceeded the hour. We also know that Dominic LeBlanc ended up staying the rest of the day and overnight in Washington before heading back to Canada. So some people are viewing that as, well, maybe it's a good sign. The talks are definitely intensifying, and there's no doubt that the move made by the Canadian government on Friday of last week to remove those counter tariffs might have been the catalyst needed. That could have come through that talk that Carney had with Trump on Thursday night, but that was the catalyst needed to try and get forward on some of those talks, which makes you think, was it a mistake in putting those counter tariffs on in the first place? Okay. As we head into the 11 o'clock news break, we will, of course, be ready to follow it up with Saskatchewan's smartest radio listener. Every Wednesday at 11 o'clock is your opportunity to play along. Do you have the answer to today's question? Let's find out coming up next here on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME.